This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suwohibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We've had, you know, vaccination, especially for children against killer diseases, you know, measles, smallpox, chickenpox, and you know, the likes, you know, over time. And so this is just another timely intervention, especially, you know, in the midst of a pandemic that has majorly disrupted our lives.
That was Cobham's Emmanuel Asukwo, an internationally acclaimed musician and national ambassador for UNICEF Nigeria, who is spreading the word that COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective. Details coming up. Also, the president of Djibouti has been declared the winner of last Friday's presidential election. And in the West African nation of Benin, vote counting is ongoing in a presidential poll boycotted by some opposition parties. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Somalia's lower chamber of parliament has extended the mandate of President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo and the current government for another 2 years in an effort to end a tense standoff. 149 lawmakers voted to approve the resolution, one abstained, three voted against. The decision came as talks stalled between the federal government and two main federal member states, Puntland and Jubaland. Both states had opposed an extension. The commander of the Mogadishu Police, Brigadier General Sadiq Omar, urged the lawmakers to seek re-election from their constituents rather than extension. He urged Prime Minister Mohamed Hossein Roble to take over responsibilities of the country and pressure the sides to engage in dialogue. But within minutes of the statement, the government moved to fire the commander, accusing him of acting against police ethics. The capital of Chad is quiet today as voters wait for the results of yesterday's election. President Idriss Deby is seeking another term in office. Reporter Katerina Hoya, who is in N'Djamena, tells VOA's Kate Bard-Dawson that turnout was low.
Well, voting went well, largely peaceful, with the large presence of security forces, particularly in the capital and N'Djamena. There were a few reports of the burning of ballot boxes and ballots, but for most part, the vote was calm. There was, however, a low voter turnout in the polling stations I visited. It was about 15 to 20%, which is probably a bit lower than what authorities had hoped.
And how is the counting going, and when are results expected?
The counting started as soon as the polling stations closed last night, and most poll workers actually finished counting in the late evening hours. Now the big work starts of moving all the ballots to the capital and N'Djamena, where they will be recounted as the counting has been centralized. Then the institutions have 2 weeks to announce the results, but I would expect it would come a bit sooner, so hopefully by end of this week, Thursday or Friday, we will have preliminary results.
Now, what's the mood in the country like with the voting over? How are things going?
I mean, the lead up to the elections was quite violent with protests and crackdowns by security forces. Again, election day was calm and the situation continues to be calm, however, amid a heavy security presence in the capital across the country.
That was journalist Katerina Hoya in N'Djamena, Chad, speaking with my colleague Kate Bound-Dawson. In the West African nation of Benin, vote counting is ongoing in a presidential poll that was boycotted by some opposition parties over violence triggered by objections to President Patrice Talon's quest for a second five-year mandate. Talon, a multimillionaire cotton magnate who touts strong economic growth under his leadership, is accused by his opponents of undermining Benin's standing as one of West Africa's most stable democracies. Voter turnout was low compared with previous elections, and there were widespread problems in identifying or registering voters. A group of civil society organizations monitoring the election said in a statement. The president of Djibouti, Ismail Omar Guelleh, has been declared the winner of Friday's presidential election in the tiny but strategic Horn of Africa nation. Provisional results received Saturday by VOA Somali Service, Guelleh winning 97.44% of the votes to just 2.48% for his rival, businessman and independent candidate Zakaria Ismail Farah. Official results will be confirmed by a constitutional council in the coming days. The president thanked the populace for renewing their trust in him to lead the country for a fifth term. He has been president since 1999. Djibouti is a strategic partner of the United States, hosting the only permanent military base in Africa. 34 migrants have drowned after their boat capsized off the coast of the Horn of Africa nation, Djibouti. The French news agency AFP, quoting a statement by the Organization for Migration, IOM, said the migrants were being transported by people smugglers and that this is the second such accident in just over a month. IOM Regional Director for East Africa and Horn of Africa, Mohamed Abdikir, wrote on Twitter that many lives are lost needlessly and that apprehending and prosecuting people traffickers and smugglers who exploit the vulnerabilities of immigrants must become a priority. The highest legislative body in South Africa has made a decision that law experts warn could cause severe harm to the country's justice system. The Constitutional Court is currently debating whether former President Jacob Zuma is guilty of contempt of court for refusing to testify at a commission of inquiry into corruption. Zuma allegedly orchestrated the plunder of state enterprises of billions of dollars when he was president between 2009 and 2018. Darren Taylor reports.
The commission led by Judge Raymond Zondo wants Zuma jailed for 2 years for being in contempt of a court order that he answer its questions. After emphasizing that everyone's equal before the law, and that it would not treat Zuma differently to anyone else in deciding the case. The Constitutional Court's done exactly that.
It sent him a letter saying, if we decide you're guilty of contempt of court, what do you think your sentence should be? That is just crazy.
Kathy Powell is a professor of public law at the University of Cape Town.
In fact, it's unprecedented. I can't find anybody of my colleagues that I've consulted who could even believe that it had been done, particularly in light of the fact that the Constitutional Court has already rebuked the Zondo Commission for being, in effect, too nice to Zuma and giving him all these second chances. This is a second chance. It's a third or a fourth.
She points out that Zuma has refused to participate with anything linked to the commission based on his claim that it's part of a political conspiracy against him. So it's highly unlikely that he'll file the necessary affidavit to the Constitutional Court.
How do you ask a man what his penalty should be for something which he thinks he didn't do? You're saying to him, if we find you've done something wrong, what penalty should we impose? And his answer is, I've done nothing wrong. He's made that so clear. So why go through this highly unusual step when you know all you're doing is wasting another week?
Powell says the court has no choice but to find Zuma guilty of contempt.
We all know the evidence. The Constitutional Court said, Zuma, obey the summons. And Zuma said, no, I won't. And then the summons came and he didn't obey it.
For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
With rollouts of COVID-19 vaccine hampered by misinformation, some renowned artists in Africa are trying to create awareness and encourage people to get their shots. Mavis Ochera in Juwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
Koban's Emmanuel Asoko, an international acclaimed musician and national ambassador for UNICEF Nigeria, is among those helping to spread the word that vaccines are safe and effective. He says this initiative was largely driven by the United Nations Children Fund using its ambassadors and cultural influencers like him, who were into music and other art forms to raise awareness and demystify the COVID-19 vaccination efforts. He says the misinformation isn't grounded in facts or research, noting that vaccines have been saving lives for decades.
Vaccines have been known to be very effective. You know, over time, we've had, you know, vaccination, especially for children against killer diseases, you know, measles, smallpox, chicken pox, you know, the likes, you know, over time. And so this is just another timely intervention, especially, you know, in the midst of a pandemic that has majorly disrupted our lives. And so it only makes sense that, you know, we should use, you know, the tools that are available to us to sensitize people and make people understand that vaccines work.
Asoko says the sooner people get themselves vaccinated, the quicker that Africa and the rest of the world can return to some semblance of normalcy. He says the quick response in creating and producing the COVID-19 vaccines bode well with coping with future pandemics.
I feel like the vaccine has a very important role in helping us return, like I said, to normal life, in helping us return to normalcy. Economy, family, social interactions, all kinds of things have been obviously interrupted gravely by the COVID-19 pandemic. And I feel like, you know, the vaccine more than many other options right now, especially with the combination of other social protocols, provide more than just a glimmer of hope. I think it gets us back into that space where we can actually begin to function, where we can have sporting activities, where we can have concerts, where we can have just knowing that there is that layer of protection, you know, against the virus.
A so-called edge people who question the vaccines to do research before making unfounded statements and discouraging others from taking them.
I find that what happens is we move from a place of supposing to a place of affirming, where it probably starts as a rumor, and before you know what's happening, you know, it becomes a matter of authority.
He says the media and various stakeholders need to help people understand the vaccines work and should be embraced. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
Malawi's Ministry of Health has expanded eligibility for the COVID-19 vaccine to all Malawians 18 and older. The decision was prompted by the approaching expiration date for about 40,000 doses the country received from the Africa Union. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's government has so far received 512,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, which it is administering to the public. The first batch of 360,000 doses came in early March under the COVAX facility. A few weeks later, Malawi received another consignment of 50,000 doses from India and 102,000 doses from the African Union. Joshua Malango is the spokesperson for Malawi's Minister of Health. He says 40,000 of the African Union doses expire Tuesday, while the other vaccine expires in July. Malango believes there is still time to distribute the AU doses before they become unusable.
We have 4 days to go. We still have tomorrow, we still have Sunday, we still have Monday.
In a revised situation update Wednesday, the Minister of Health said all Malawians 18 and older are now eligible to be vaccinated. Critics have questioned why Malawi accepted doses with such a short expiration date. However, government officials said they did not anticipate the drugs would be unused given the huge turnout of people during the early days of the vaccination process. Dr. Mike Chisema is a manager for the expanded immunization program. He says the ministry has also started deploying medical workers to encourage vaccinations. He says the aim is to be near those who would want to receive the vaccine. We don't want people to travel long distances to seek vaccination. This will help people with disabilities to access the vaccine without difficulties. The ministry said this week that out of its 512,000 doses of AstraZeneca vaccine, it has only used 164,000, mostly in urban areas. Healthcare activists say that is largely because of a lack of civic education on the vaccine, especially in rural areas. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre. Malawi.
COVID-19 has hit Africa's tourism sector, which has employed an estimated 3 million people, especially hard hit. But the crisis also has inspired some interesting innovations that further the message of conservation. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Kudusribwe Shibunye, President and CEO of the African Wildlife Foundation. Shibunye began by describing the Zoom safaris offered by some African national parks because travel restrictions are keeping most international visitors away.
The Zoom safaris are phenomenal now. You sit on your fireside with a glass of wine in front of your laptop or phone, and people take you around Serengeti or Nairobi Park or Kruger National Park. We have several Land Rovers or jeeps traveling across the park, and they're sending live footage to a central place. And the main person, the anchor, is showing you different cameras depending on what's going on.
What's the underlying rationale for the Zoom safaris?
The basic idea is to keep clients still connected to wildlife. Who knows? People who have always wanted to come to Africa, they might change their mind and say, you know what? It's too much trouble now. I can't. We cannot afford to lose that global constituency. But also it's important to the foot soldiers in the park as they interact with wildlife. It gives them hope. It gives them continuity. They travel the parks and therefore they increase the eyes around the park. So it's a huge opportunity and advantage in that way.
Are you hoping that safaris will continue to be online even when travel restrictions are eased?
The last thing we want to see is becoming a substitute to travel. Travel is so important, not only seeing wildlife, but we are connecting Americans to Africans, people-to-people contact.
I know that the pandemic has widened access to the parks in other ways. Before COVID, when people always had to go to physical workplaces, they tended to come only during peak migration season during the summer and on holidays. Since many people are teleworking, they can now come to the parks, get online on the internet in their lodges, and then work some and safari some.
We think that actually COVID is going to turn the industry around. People will be able to take off 3 weeks during winter season because they can still work while they are in Nairobi Park, which is going to increase revenue for conservation in so many ways.
I was fascinated to learn that there are many domestic tourists now that there weren't before.
I visited Kidepo National Park 2 weeks ago. It's one of the oldest parks in Uganda. For the first time, 60% of the tourists were domestic. Normally, they receive less than 1%. So the opportunity here is that we need to develop domestic tourists, regional tourists too. We would like to see Zimbabweans visit Uganda, Kenyans visit Uganda, and Rwandese, and vice versa.
I understand that safari guides have actually been enjoying an enhanced role since the start of COVID.
If you know any good guide in Africa, they are phenomenal. These guys are data banks, but they've been just giving that information to international arrivals. So we are now thinking of telling stories of lions and rhinos and giraffes to Africa kids in schools. And we've been taking kids living near national parks to see wildlife physically. It's been a phenomenon.
So how would you sum up your message and approach to conservation?
It's almost like people liking wildlife more than people, or sometimes trying to protect wildlife at the expense of people. That's how Africans see it, what is happening. We must all come together as the globe to understand that conservation is not about protecting wildlife animals so that tourists can enjoy them. That's not the point. So we need to do a little bit of more explanation. It's about protecting ourselves as people from environmental degradation, such as COVID-19 pandemic has taught us right now. We must all come together as the globe to understand that conservation is not about protecting wildlife animals. The biggest priorities right now should be restoring wildlife habitats, planning development activities and infrastructure in such a way that does not compromise environmental well-being. We are at a crossroad. Africa is deciding now its future.
That was Kudusribwe Shibunye, President and CEO of the African Wildlife Foundation, based in Nairobi, speaking with VOA's Adam Phillips. Uganda is introducing solar-powered iPads that officials say will help lower-income parents provide their children with access to online education. Judith Nabakuba, Uganda's ICT minister, says The pilot program will commence in June, targeting students forced out of school due to COVID-19. Reporter Mugume Davis Rawakaringi has more from Kampala, Uganda.
A group of children play soccer in Mzungu village in Kabalagala, a Kampala suburb. One of them is 17-year-old William Lubega, a primary 6 student. Lubega has not been able to attend school since the first case of COVID-19 was reported in Uganda in March last year. Lubega says he misses school and has not benefited from distance learning that the government introduced when schools were closed as a measure to stop the spread of COVID-19.
We have 5 children at home, 3 goes to school, but for me, I don't go. The other one is still young.
But soon, Rubega could be beneficiary of the government program to introduce solar-powered iPads to low-income households.
I have never used online, and I don't know how to use it, but I can learn if they teach me, and I want to learn.
When schools were closed, the government promised to distribute free radios and TV sets to enable e-learning, a promise that remains unfulfilled. Judith Nabakova, Uganda's ICT minister, says the government will fulfill its promise this time.
They are going to implement it beginning with 1,500 being solar-powered tabs. They have to study whether it works, whether it will make sense to the users. And if it does so, then we shall have to make a paper for government to adopt.
The iPads, at a cost of 900 million Uganda shillings or $240,000, will have free internet with the content delivered in English and local dialects. Nabakova also says the iPads will help families gain easy access to information on government programs and policies. Student Roy Tendereza says she'll be glad to help fellow students to adopt the use of technology. But she says studying online can be challenging.
Home, like, it's not a good learning environment. TV is there. Parents are saying, do this and this. Your sister's disturbing, shouting. Oh, you can't read seriously.
Teacher Okobo Joseph Bosco welcomed the initiative. He says such programs are long overdue.
Since I started working within education, I've never seen a weird situation like this one. And that does not mean that education must stop completely. So, if the government is going ahead to employ use of iPads that are powered by solar, a solar-powered iPad can be used anywhere as long as the solar energy is.
Okobo is, however, concerned with poor internet coverage and how iPads will be supervised for better use. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakaringi in Kampala, Uganda.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the interview.